is starting up here? It's still starting up here.
Why did you stop the table?
Here.
I'm getting feedback, isn't it?
I know. I have a voice that carries. Alright.
It starts when you finish?
Yes. Alright, I'm giving a talk on using KGS Embed in KDE applications. This is actually a little two parts of the talk. There's a little bit of technical on some of the details of implementing KGS Embed, but there's also how and why KGS Embed is actually important for KDE. So that's where we're going to start out with this talk. My name is Ian Geiser. I'm from Philadelphia, the United States. If I am talking too fast or using slang or not clear on a subject, please somebody raise your hand and let me know and I can explain myself. Ideally, these notes will also be on the web later this evening along with some of the other KGS Embed how-tos that I've published on our website. A little bit of background on KGS Embed. A while ago, I think about 2 years ago now, Rich Moore had decided to take the KDE JavaScript engine and bind it to Qt and add a few embedding interfaces to allow us to have KGS within our arbitrary C++ applications. It has an advantage over many other JavaScript implementations that it's very small and very easy to embed. The library on the Win32 build is about 300 some K, and under Linux I think it is about 400 some K. It's very small. While it's not one of the fastest out there, it is still pretty responsive when dealing with things like tight loops and creating large amounts of objects. As KGS has expanded and matured, we've actually had an architecture that allows us to add new bindings as plugins so that projects can actually add new data types as they see fit. We've also beefed up the interface that's made it very easy to embed within a C++ application and modify the JavaScript interpreter during runtime. Now, where does this exactly fit in? In KDE, for some time now, we've had the standard C++. If you'd like to extend an application, you just whip out your text editor and start adding on C code. With KDE 2, we've gotten kparts and dcop that we can add plugins, we can add other components from other systems. With dcop, JavaScript applications. We can script applications from outside of the process without actually starting up another instance. We can use this from Shell, from Python, from Perl, from many other languages. Well, this is all good, but the problem is kparts is C++ still, so you have to compile. There's binary compatibility, and dcop isn't really something you can do from within the process easily. This is where KJS Embed fits in. When OpenOffice catches up. We have the advantage of we can make plugins with KJS Embed, we can access dcop interfaces, and we can also do the same extension that we do with C++. We can create and manipulate the C++ objects during runtime. We can also build our completely new user interfaces and C++ and binding-based objects at runtime also. We have access to pretty much every KDE widget that is bound through the QWidget plugins. So basically, if you can see it in Designer, you get it for free with KJS Embed. Also, we have the ability that we can go in and take any Q object and automatically bind it with about one line of code. All of this put together gives you the ability to add plugins to your applications that are not at the mercy of things like binary compatibility, different architectures, and just the average packaging nightmare that some plugins run into when trying to ship to multiple distributions. With the advent of things like KMU stuff, you can actually take these scripts and make them available on the internet for download at runtime. So various applications like AIM programs, graphics programs, media players, they can all be extended through these downloadable plugins. Now this is where you have to also ask yourself a question. Like any technology, it can be abused and put in the wrong place and not very useful. One of the big things that we have found over the course of contracting through the last few years is that many business problems that deal with extending software can be solved through things like set logic, being able to make decisions, Boolean expressions and whatnot, and string manipulations. One of the entertaining things about KJS Embed is that since we use PCRE, we have a full Perl-style regular expressions engine. JavaScript also has very nice string handling utilities, which makes you able to do pretty much anything you ever needed to do with manipulating strings, creating arrays, and reordering things. Also, JavaScript has a very Java and C-like control flow to the logic, so you can take very quickly your C and Java and C++ knowledge and write competent scripts. We can also, as I said before, we can manipulate existing objects from inside the process. Unlike dcop, where we would shell out, or from another console you would start issuing dcop commands, we are running in process and we're not having to deal with shared memory issues, marshalling issues, and some of the other problems you run into when you have to go between the two separate processes. We also have the ability to extend the user interface without rebuilding the plugins. One of the big problems we run into in C++ applications that ship C++ based plugins is that whenever the base API changes or binary compatibility changes, all of these plugins must be recompiled. If the distribution changes their version of libc, this introduces many packaging problems. Since a lot of plugins and small extensions that KJS Embed is popular for really don't have the packaging overhead of, say, a large-scale application where you have release coordinators and whatnot, it's usually some guy hacks out a script at night and posts it on the web. Having to deal with the packaging issues associated with that is a lot of unnecessary overhead for the size of the task at hand. This is an advantage for KJS Embed because you usually have one or two files, you put them in a tar archive, and you can put it on your web page. Now this is where the meat and potatoes is of setting up KJS Embed. I have a small demo application which I'll have available for download that will be associated with this slide. It basically has this small user interface file and an associated C++ application. To set up the interpreter to actually be able to script your application with KJS Embed, it's actually very simple. You, first step, set up your security policy. Currently at this point, it's disable everything, which is just the built-in JavaScript things like math object, string object, and array. There's also the capability all, which basically says any bindings are now available for use. This was because we are still unsure of how online components will deal. We're not sure if we want to go down the road of that ActiveX has shown us is not always the coolest in the world, but we're trying to find something better. The next step is to actually create the part. Since the KJS Embed is all encapsulated within a part, by allocating it, you configure everything, it sets up your interpreter, it sets up your context and the root objects and your global settings within the JavaScript interpreter. The next part is your queue objects can all be exposed through one line. You tell the part to add an object to the global context, you give the pointer to the cue object, and then you give the name that will arrive in your global context. In this case, we have our text value, we have our the text value label, which is right here. We have our color value, which is this widget. We also have the level value, which is this widget. The cue objects are very easy. When we publish those, all of the cue properties are automatically exposed as data members, and the slots are exposed as functions. They can be connected the same way they are in your C++. You can connect JavaScript slots to C++ signals. You can also connect, you can also call JavaScript members from within your C++ application to put data back and forth. So we do make it very easily to not only have your JavaScript access the native C++ objects, but we make it very easy for C++ to access the JavaScript objects that may be changing around while the system is running. This is very handy for people who want to write plugins where the implementation is in the JavaScript plugin and the real interface here is just going to be rendering data to the user interface. To access these published objects, you basically will deal with them as if they were a normal JavaScript object. All cue objects that are published, you will get their publicly available properties and slots. The slots look like they're the normal functions, although they have some key guides. When calling the Qt-based bindings, when connecting signals and slots and calling those methods, you are limited to the number of arguments because of some current limitations within the cue object. Luckily, these have changed, and Qt4 will make this far more exciting. At this point, you are basically confined to the built-in cue variant-based data types and usually one or two arguments. We have gone through and created stubs so that most Qt-based signals that are emitted from the core Qt library are handled within our slot proxy library, but there are some shortcomings with that area. Native methods on opaque proxies can be called normally, and we can handle pretty much any object in the arguments that, as long as you have bindings for, you can send and return those in arbitrary order. The JavaScript types also map to Qt types transparently. We don't actually have Qdate, Qstring, Qstring list, and Qmap available in JavaScript. We map their associative array to a Qmap where it makes sense. If it's a list, if it's an array of strings, we transparently cast that to a string list. Or if it's just a container of variants, we will construct one of those on the fly. Strings transparently map between a Qstring and a normal string. So when you're in Java or JavaScript, you can access them as if they were a normal JavaScript string, and when they're passed back into C++, they're a normal Qstring, and the Unicode is still preserved. This has to do with some of the very nice features that the authors of KJS gave us with dealing with the Unicode strings and converting those back and forth to the Qt types. The last one is a little interesting. JavaScript only really has a date object, which is analogous to the Qt date time object. So if you deal with either a strict Qdate or a Qtime, they will end up getting converted to a partial date. So you have to be aware of that when you're taking a Qtime from C++ and putting that into your JavaScript. It may not act as you would expect, and you are sometimes safer when working with both KJS embedded in C++ to stick with the Qdate time where appropriate. Now, once you've actually gotten your user interface bound, there's the idea of custom data types within your application. Most applications have custom objects that you want to be able to allocate and delete and manage. With KJS embed, we allow plugins to be able to create either opaque proxies, which can be any C-based, C++-based object, and queue object-based proxies, where we are able to publish queue object-based classes directly into the virtual machine. The reason why you want to do this is in situations where, say, you have a list of a certain type of object that you would like to be able to create and manipulate from within KJS embed and then pass back to the C++ application. This could possibly be used for playlist management in a music player or contact management in an instant messaging application. Native signals and slots, if you have a QT signal connecting to a QT slot and you're not actually processing in JavaScript, can take pretty much any arguments. You are again limited to the signals and slots that our JavaScript proxy supports. So you are diligent to check that first if you do need custom single slot signatures for your object. The best classes for this are QWidget and QObject-based classes if you want to be able to create a special label or if you want to be able to create a special QObject-based class that you would manipulate from arrays or containers from within KJS embed. To bind these is actually very simple. These plugins are basically kparts plugins, so you would deal with them as any other plugin. There's templates in kdevelop that expedite this. And the real important parts of this are to create the queue object, to create your object proxy that's going to contain this, and then to add the bindings to the global context. Actually, that's wrong. It's the context of the object proxy. Now, there's nothing exciting in the loader here. Basically, the real entertaining stuff is in the create binding. What create bindings is called by the JavaScript KJS factory. This is the central location that allows us to arbitrarily create these bindings on the fly. This will call the widget plugins stub that will allow this to be allocated when you first desire this. Basically, you're going to come into this function. Your arguments that are passed into the constructor are a normal KJS list, and you're able to pass in variable lengths. There is no limit on the number of arguments that can be passed in. At that point, you null out your queue object. This is very important because we do a lot of null checking in there. Whenever you create and delete things in your bindings or talking to JavaScript from C++, make it very sure that you null out everything when you declare it, and make sure it's null out when it's deleted, because we rely on that to correctly deal with weird behaviors like objects going out of scope or bad construction, errors within the construction process. The next step, it's on two lines here, is we actually create our object proxy, and we give it the our pointer to the queue object that we're passing in. That's where this guy comes in. We then check if the proxy was correctly created. If everything is okay at that point, we can set up our object implementation. We pass in the parent object that we're actually the one that we want to publish, and from that we're able to actually get the real object proxy. What this does is every implementation, every method will have an ID associated with it. At which point, when you call this add bindings, this will publish all of the slots and QT properties to this queue object. This will allow us to allow JavaScript then to manipulate it as if it was a native JavaScript type. This is a very simple one. You can get very complex. The one thing that you need to be very careful of, though, is that the slot arguments are very limited in the data types that you can handle. To get around this limitation, we have a thing called an opaque proxy. This is a little more complicated. It has two separate classes associated. There is a loader, and then there are the actual bindings. You do not have QT properties available to you. You also do not have slots. But it does work for non-Q object-based classes, which makes sense if you have a data class that's not Q object-based that you want to be able to manipulate and pass back and forth between C++ and JavaScript. This is also, I think I mentioned this earlier, is we call an opaque proxy. Right now there is a problem with the opaque proxy that we have addressed and will be fixed in the next release, where internally it uses a void pointer, so deallocation is not done correctly. We do not actually delete any data, so nothing is lost, but over a long term there are some problems. This has been addressed and luckily will go away shortly. The first part of this opaque proxy is the actual loader. There are two big parts to this. There's the constructor, which basically doesn't do a heck of a lot, and then there's the create binding. What this does is this sets up the stubs to let the KJS factory probe all of the possible widget or all of the possible bindings plugins and find out which one is correct and then publish that binding. The reason why we do this is because we don't want to load hundreds of bindings that don't really make sense to the user who's writing this very small script. We just want to allocate these the first time they're asked for to ensure that we don't have these hundreds of plugins loaded, because we are accumulating a fair number of bindings already. The next step here is to actually create the binding itself. Like the rest of the bindings, the big functions they have is static add bindings, which publishes each of the members, enums, and data members to the context of this object. There's also the implements call. This is we set this to true because we want to be able to call members on the KJS object. And then there is the actual call function itself. This is the one that will be, whenever you have a JavaScript object, you're going to call a method on it. It will go through this function. We also, as a convenience, the pattern we seem to be gravitating towards is we keep track of the method number ID from the enum here, so we can match up basically what method is associated with the object. Another thing that's very interesting about the custom object or about the opaque proxy implementation, there is one of these implementations allocated per binding member. So you cannot store any data associated with that actual pointer as a private member. Strange and entertaining things will happen. To basically deal with this, it's encased within that KJS object where the actual pointer is stored. So it is passed around similar to Python self or C++ is this. Inside the implementation for the add bindings kind of spells out a little more how this works. What we tend to do, first of all, is it's very important to check if we were able to come out of this JavaScript object and find an implementation for the opaque proxy. If they're because of a coding error or a grammatical error, somehow somebody sends the wrong data type in, we want to bail right away, saying that this is invalid. The next step is to get the type safety from KJS back into C++ and vice versa. We check the type name to make sure that it's the object we do in fact expect coming in from C++ or JavaScript. Then what we do is we tend to gravitate towards the idea of creating a small array that has the JavaScript name that we want to appear in an enum, which is that MID variable. We then go through and we create the object implementation, and we put the method, we post that method and attach it to that instance of the object. Enums are handled similarly. This is the textual representation and the integer value that will be associated with that enum. This allows you, if you have, this one's called my custom object. So if you call my custom object dot on, it would return a zero within C++. So the enums look similar to the way they would in the C++ end versus JavaScript. Again, you just go through and put these and create them in the global or create these in the context of the object's instance. Once we've added these, we can actually call them. Like I said earlier, because each of these my custom object implementations are associated one per method, we end up coming into this function. And of course, again, we check if we in fact did get an opaque proxy. If not, you should return a null or a Boolean false. If you do not return something, JavaScript can tend to get very upset, and you'll get some not very clear errors because it will assume it's getting data back. In fact, it won't get anything valid back. It will usually either crash or start going off into the sunset on you. Again, we check the custom type name. Again, if it's wrong, we return a valid null so that they can check it. Of which, if it is in fact the right one, we have a small hack in place that will actually allow, which will suck out the data, allow us to cast it to what we think it is, and then we can start to manipulate it. This, instead of storing it as a data member, this is going to be your actual pointer that you're manipulating from the binding itself. At which point, we switch on the method ID that we've stored as our private member here, and we have a switch case that basically says, okay, if I come in and I was method mode, I can then just call the mode member on that object, and then you use the KJS data type of number, and that's what I'm going to return. Then from JavaScript, they're going to call whatever this object's name, foo.mode, they're going to get a number value back. Same on for the mutator method. Now, what's very interesting at this one is that, number one, we have to cast this integer to the enum, and number two, we have these helper functions that will actually take a lot of the code duplication of extracting common data types out of your argument list that comes in. This argument list is basically, if you call a member function, and this is put into the object self, and the arguments are handled in this list that you can iterate through. This will just extract an integer from the first variable and feed that into our function to set the mode. Once it's all set, once we are all finished, we then should set the value back, and cast to avoid star and set it back so that the new information is correctly relayed. Because basically this pointer, it is perfectly valid that this may change completely, so we need to reflect that on exit. And then we return the JavaScript value, which will be exposed to KJX. It's a little convoluted of a process, and we are still refining it. But this seems to be the way that has been working the most reliably for us to add new bindings. Now comes the fun part. We have created these custom objects now in KJS embed, and we can actually pass them back and forth between C++ and KJS. This is one of the more powerful components. If any of you have ever dealt with embedding and extending Python and PyQt, you know the entertainment that is involved with creating the Python type in C++, sending it in to the Python interpreter, and then sucking it back up. We've actually tried to make that as simple as possible because our main focus is to make it easy to interact between JavaScript and C++. Now up on top here, I have our JavaScript function. Basically, what this JavaScript function is going to do is it's going to create a complex object, which I have a binding plugin for. It's going to set some values in it and then return that object. Now in KJS, I could just call read complex object and I get a complex object back that I can manipulate. Now to access that from C++, we have a method here that I took out of my example code. The first step is we ask the part, hey, does the global context have read complex object? That if it does, we then go in there, we grab our exec context, we then can call the method read complex object with no arguments, which is an empty argument list, and we are going to have returned to us a KJS value. That KJS value will be a complex type. Now from that, we can extract, if we can check it then, we say yes, in fact, you are a complex type, because in KJS it's perfectly valid to return a false or a bool, multiple different types per function. Like it or not, that's reality, some of us don't. At which time we check, yes, it is in fact, something did come back, it is in fact a complex object. We can do just like we did in our binding. We can cast it to our complex object type and then start manipulating it accordingly in our main code. This is actually much simpler and much easier to deal with than some of the other implementations because we wanted to make sure that it was easy to get these custom types in and out in a reasonable fashion. This will allow you to be able to create large amounts of objects in JavaScript through some sort of branch logic or algorithm, and then be able to put those back into C++ for saving operations or updating the user interface, like we do down here if there's a failure. We also have a couple extra features in here that are not always usable or useful, but can tend to be very helpful with debugging. The first one of them is the KJS embed console. We have a part console that you can actually call by asking the KJS embed part for its view, and then you can show that widget. It gives you an interpreter that you can type in arbitrary commands and get a response. This is very handy, and when you're developing, you can have embed the console within your application, pop it up, and start manipulating your application to develop your scripts. The other big thing we have that we encourage developers to use on both bindings and accessing JavaScript from C++ is the KJS completion. This is a very powerful object that allows us to check what the state of the system is after we execute a JavaScript command. There could have been a syntax error, there could have been return data, there could have been a crash. We need to be able to detect that, and that's what the completion object does. We can get that after we issue our command by asking the part for its completion value, and then checking the type. Is it a normal? Is it a break? Is it a throw? Is it a return value? If it's a throw, this is actually an exception. This means that something went wrong in the KJS engine and it threw a JavaScript exception. If we did not catch that in JavaScript, it will get forwarded to C++, at which time we can extract the value as a string or a data type and find out what happened. This is very handy if you are actually allowing your users to write scripts that if they didn't, if they were not diligent enough to catch all of their exceptions, you can actually return a coherent error message saying, hey, this exception happened, you didn't catch it, maybe you should. We also have, as I had mentioned earlier, the argument extraction helper functions. We can extract almost every Q variant that is supported within KJS, plus Q object and Q widget. These are very handy for eliminating a lot of duplicated code when extracting the arguments from the argument list. We also have very extensive KJS value to Q variant conversions. So things like Q colors will convert to a string under JavaScript. So you can type in the hex, you can type in the textual text, like the color blue or the color red. And when it's forwarded into C++, it's handled just like a Q color. We have the same thing for strings, dates, fonts, rectangles, and I think the other entertaining one is the string list. We actually did take a fair bit of effort to detect what kind of an array it is in JavaScript. JavaScript has associative arrays where you can have either something that looks like a QMap of strings, a QMap of variants, a normal value list of variants, or a string list. We went through and tried to figure this out as well as possible because it makes interacting with things like decomp and with your C++ code a lot easier. You don't have to be as careful with what you're converting these types to. The last thing that we added, which really the trolls made very easy for us was with the Q widget factory, is we have transparent access to QTUI files, along with complete support for all their widget plugins. This is a very, very powerful feature of KJS Embed, where you can draw the user interface in Qt Designer, and we use Q widget factory to recursively publish the UI file. So if you have, you load the UI file and the root argument, we'll call it class view, if you have a checkbox in there that is named checkbox value, then you would go view.checkboxValue to access that object from the top level. This allows you to do most of your user interface within Qt Designer and do just your own logic within KJS Embed. This helps simplify the code and lets the developers concentrate on what they really care about. And that's just the logic. Now, where do we go from here? KJS Embed is quickly evolving. We're nowhere near finished. It is getting powerful enough that we encourage developers to take a look at it because it is, we use it at our company to do a couple utility tasks, mailing labels, some print management. The decomp interface makes it exceedingly powerful within KDE. It also has access to QTSQL and the Qt Canvas. In the future, we are also bringing better memory management. There are currently some issues with ownership of pointers when you go between C++ and JavaScript. We have worked out many of these issues, and they will be available in the next release. There's also increase in speed from Apple, and we are also actively working on KJS to make that better. We are one of the faster ones, but we are not the fastest yet. We are also adding more bindings for KDE and Qt classes as we can move on, and we're making it as easy as possible for end developers to actually add their own binding types without having to extend the core engine at all. Qt4 is also going to give us more powerful integration and bindings. Their single slot and Q object modifications are going to give us better ability to map between JavaScript and C++ and do some very remarkable things. We're very excited about some of the stuff coming down the pipe there. And lastly, we are looking for more developers all the time. We want people to be trying to use this, telling us where it's good, telling us where it's bad, telling us the things we need. A lot of the embedding interfaces come out of the CodePeak developers and Amaric telling us that, hey, this interface is horrible, we need something that works like this. One of the big things we're trying to deal with is the ability to start and reset the interpreter, because we as developers working on this with our little test scripts never ran into a situation where we wanted to stop and reset the interpreter, but lo and behold, developers want to be able to stop these plugins once in a while. So we need to add that feature. At this time, I'd like to open up the floor to any questions, or if anyone had any comments on anything I have covered so far.
Bill, do you know how much applications actually are using KJS event? I tell you another one that you haven't known is Amaroc. So you can mention some of the applications already using?
Kopi has been playing with it. I know that the Kexene developers have talked about it. I don't know how where that is going. There's a couple standalone applications that have popped up in CVS. Some of them were not even written by me. It's very much in its infancy though. I mean, it has applications in KDevelop, it has applications in KOffice. And it's very small and embeddable, so it does have a lot of places where it could go. I think it's at this point we're still gaining the momentum for exposure. Were there any other questions? Yes.
Code to bind makes the bindings of the C++ object. Seem to be always similar. Are you planning to develop also tools to make those easier to make?
We have right now an XSLT style sheet that will convert the deoxygen XML files into bindings in an automated fashion. Unfortunately, XSLT has some limitations. We are actively and aggressively looking at tools, though, to automate the creation of bindings. There are rumors that the DCOP IDL is modifiable for it. Also, we're thinking that with the new Qt4, there may be some tools that we can use outside of the Q object through either extending mock or maybe adding our own macro similar to DCOP to automatically publish these. I should also note, to make it very clear, we add very transparent access and support for DCOP, so you can actually access a lot of interfaces even through DCOP, and since it is running the way DCOP operates, you're still in process. You don't go through the server, but you do end up with some of the marshalling and demarshalling. Are there any more questions then? Yes?
How difficult it is to use your framework for all the scripting languages? There are dozens of them, and personally I don't like JavaScript. I'd like to have Python support. How difficult it is for me to take your code and do the same game again?
Theoretically, on the surface, the API is fairly simple. We do cater to a few KJS-isms. The one reason why we are very much behind KJS versus any other one, though, is because there tend to be some problems when dealing between C++ and other bindings languages. If that problem is easily overcome through your competency or through other tools, that shouldn't be very difficult. Like I said, we do cater to a lot of the KJS types, but it should be easily enough extracted from the way that we operate. The way that our bindings are, there is no reason why those cannot be ported to any other architectures. we've toyed with the idea of Python, but between some of the tools that they've developed so far with SIP and whatnot, I'm not sure how big of a point it is, but I mean, we will not stand in the way of anyone who wants to improve it in that respect.
Yes, I'm just saying we've already solved that problem with the smoke library that's used by both Perl, Qt, and Qt Ruby. It's a common
smoke
library.
Yes, people have, some people have brought that up. We haven't been able to figure it out yet, so.
Maybe I'll help explain a bit then.
Yes. I mean, it is something we're curious about. I think it is something that does warrant exploration. It's just a big problem is that we're very much concentrating on the core architecture versus a lot of the bindings, and there is some learning curve to some of the other elements of like libsip. Or some for Python or Smoke, or I think there's another one, Cal. There's a Perl based one based off of KDoc.
Well, that generates the Smoke library at KD bindings configuration time.
So okay.
That's how they link together. But Smoke's probably over the top. You know, I think you actually need to have not the whole KD and Qt interface, you want to have an editing. You know, a scripting oriented one, which has got all sorts of things in it that you don't really need. So I think you're solving a slightly different problem. You know, the Ruby bindings are for RAD, whereas you're scripting and sort of low end RAD. So you don't want 1,000 classes thrown at you because there's just too much learning curve. It's no longer simple.
Well, and also that's why we went with the kparse approach for the extended bindings, because we didn't want to have to load instances of every known Qt and KDE class if you just wanted to be able to manipulate a color chooser. We wanted to keep it as light as possible in that respect. I know that there's no real aversion though to using other binding types. Similar to the way that Microsoft uses the ActiveX objects within their JavaScript implementation, I see no reason why we couldn't have a Smoke proxy of some sort, similar to the way we do kparse and the Qt UI files already.
Well, I'm not sure if JavaScript has the equivalent of Perl's autoload or Ruby's method missing. You need a sort of catch-all function that a class. If it doesn't have a method, it goes into Perl autoload.
Mm-hmm.
So if you funnel all the missing methods into one,
our factory
has to work like that, really.
Our factory does have facilities to deal with those sort of things. If there are bindings missing, we can return. We can detect that and return a null object proper, so you can do a null check.
That would do it then.
All right. We will have to talk some after this.
I have a question.
Yes,
how does KGS and KD's JavaScript implementation compare to SpiderMonkey, the one in Mozilla? It seems to me that they do more or less the same thing, but for different platforms.
SpiderMonkey is exceedingly complicated and very difficult to extend, in our opinion, where KGS is much simpler. SpiderMonkey, though, performs much, much better in tight loops and object allocation. So they do have a speed advantage. Luckily, Apple has been assisting us and helping us with quite a few speed improvements within KJS. As an example, to come here, I wanted to fill the memory sticks for my MP3 player, so I wrote a JavaScript that interacted with Juke via DCOP, and it could run about 5,000 DCOP calls in a tight loop in about 4 seconds on an Athlon XP2600.
Okay. But performance is not that interesting. What about like support for components and kparse integration, etc.?
We have, you can access any type, you can access read-only and read-write kparse from KJS embed. Note, this is different than the job, they just use KJS within Conqueror. This is outside of that, so you can't just put a KJS embed application on the web and click on it, we force it to actually be on the local file system and set with executable rights or manually started through the JavaScript interpreter. But we do have full access to KIO, KParts, and we are working on beefing up the QTSQL support and getting a little better. We have full access to the QImageIO and a fair bunch of the KImage effects. We actually, color paint is one thing I want to attack with it because they have, there's so many neat applications with image processing in that respect. Did that answer your question?
Yep.
All right, last call for questions. Thank you very much.
You're back.